All right, so let's call this meeting to order and go into the Pledge of Allegiance that we're also familiar with. And begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
General. All right, let's do a roll call.
Keith Storton.
Here.
Charles Borbeau.
Here.
Jeff Lee. I'm sorry. So we have Karen.
Karen Bright.
Thank you so much. Jeff Heller.
Here.
John Hammond.
Here.
Sheila Blake. Debbie Arnold.
I'm here.
Bruce Gibson.
Here.
John Pichong. Lynn Compton.
Here.
Adam Hill.
Here.
Robert Enns.
Here.
Aaron Gomez.
Here.
We have a quorum.
All right, now I'm going to open it up for public comment. This is for items not on the agenda. I've got a few speaker cards here. Just as a reminder, you got 3 minutes to speak whatever you would like to speak about. Please, no raising or no booing, no hissing, no cheering. You can raise your hands. That's about it. So first person looks like Mark London, after which will be Wayne Hall, followed by Arlen Sharp.
My first question is,
when will the forensic audit be released? My second question is, why are we still using the conflicted law firm that's still here? Thank you.
All right, next, Wayne Hall.
Wayne Hall from Creston. It's been a year and a half since your board first was exposed to the misdeeds, fraud, criminality, and financial abuses of Bill Worrell, his staff, and his contractors. Much of that was reported to you. Much of what was reported to you suggested the depths of his treachery exceeded staff and contractors. You promised to look into it. You promised transparency. You promised to look into what appeared to be excessive fees, virtually taxes, collected and accumulated by the IWMA. You even began asking whether the IWMA was necessary anymore. Yet you're carrying on today as if nothing happened. It feels like the former director and legal counsel simply retired and business has gone on as usual, including the continuation of spending public funds to prevent transparency from occurring. The law firm that was supposed to protect you from the corruption we have all witnessed is still representing you, even with evidence of their conflicts of interest and questionable expertise. Actions speak louder than words, and actions have been minimal. Yes, there have been some accounting improvements made, but since you continue to be secretive, since we haven't seen the results of the forensic audit and investigation, since you are still denying public records requests, since you continue to retain the same dubious law firm, one can only presume it is business as usual. That is, rate taxpayers will continue to be gouged, whatever involvement this board, its members, or other solid waste entities had in the exposed corruption will be ignored. Records will continue to be hidden or destroyed as they have been in the past. So I ask myself, why would you be taking such a course? My conclusion is that based on your experience with citizens' apathy about government corruption, you believe the IWMA is something you will even understand or care about. If you try to fix it, it will only bring light to the whole mess all over again. Best to sweep it under the rug. Here's my message to you. No one is going to fix this for you, and some fixing is still needed. There is still significant damage exposure coming ahead, and you coming ahead of you, and at least in the form of ridiculously long-term and costly solid waste collection contracts many of you have been duped into granting. No doubt the ones who supported and facilitated Bill Worrell's bilking of the IWMA, the ones who benefited from it both in our community and on this board, are still up to no good, just being more careful. You still have a festering boil that won't go away on its own. Your actions have to be about transparency, about finding the truth, and about accountability. Otherwise, you're the problem. There are enough of us out there committed to the public good who won't just fade away, and our patience is wearing thin. If you aren't willing to follow through with holding those accountable for the misappropriations and thefts of millions of dollars, then we will.
Thanks, Mr. Hall. Next up, we have Arlen Sharp.
Hi, thank you for offering this forum. My name is Arlen Sharp. I'm a resident of San Miguel. I'm here to, number one, thank you for being existing, because it's the IWM that I always call when I say, what do I do with this, and how do I recycle this, and what can we do? So I really appreciate that it exists. I really appreciate the effort that it is trying to organize countywide all our disparate communities and be one source that can effectively be a source of education for residents and businesses. What I'd like to see, and I'm a teacher, is significant improvement in community and business outreach as to what we can do. I think the reduce, recycle, reuse mantra that we all hear just sort of confuses a lot of us who really care about our community, whether it's litter, whether it's climate change. And I feel so strongly that if there was support from the IWM to go out and publicize effectively, whether you're talking about schools or businesses or individuals, or make sure there's a uniform, consistent voice that's letting citizens know, what can we do? What should we maybe not use? What are the most destructive things? What is the priority? It's a lot of stuff, but if you look back in history, look at World War II, where the entire country banded together with rationing and vegetable gardens and save rubber and all these things. And I think we're in an even more, a bigger crisis than what World War II was. So I just feel very strongly that we have the opportunity and we have the resources to actually educate our community and reach the people who already care but are confused and don't know what to do, and maybe even reach those who think it's all just a bunch of hogwash and doesn't matter. And if we can do that, I think we could just be like a rising star nationally as well. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, Jeffrey Speck, followed by Elizabeth Dukas, I believe. I apologize for that. And after her will be Claire Mamakas. Mr. Speck.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeffrey Speck, lifetime resident of the city of San Luis Obispo. Folks, I'm here to ask your board today for transparency, something that I didn't think that I would have to be asked in the wake of the corruption you found within your own organization and your promises to fix it in the public eye. Yes, you are part of one of the many hidden forms of government we know exist that many don't seem to care about. That's no excuse for not doing your job, folks. In representing your constituents, your colleagues, and carrying out your fiduciary and constitutional duties, you hold public office. You oversee a public entity that record its activities in public records. Please be transparent. Make these public records available. Folks, policy has got to change here. We have no accountability. You are elected officials. The people that elected you They deserve better. They're entrusting you to do the right thing. By withholding these records, this is the opposite of transparency. This is corruption. All of you need to be accountable. Step up to bat. Practice what you preach. Put the power back into the hands of the people as it belongs. We need you to do your jobs. This is a disgrace. It's horrible. What does integrated waste management actually do other than get caught up in scandals and cost the citizens a lot of money? This is not what the people deserve. They deserve better. Mr. Gomez, you are the chair of the board. Have you done anything, sir, about the lack of being able to get rid of recycling, aluminum cans, bottles? I know you don't like plastic, sir. I'm not a big fan of it either. But doesn't the consumer deserve to get their money back? Thank you.
Elizabeth?
Good afternoon, and thank you for your correct pronunciation. I am Elizabeth Dukas from Grover Beach. Members of your board have had a practice of supporting and protecting staff when they have done wrong. IWMA Chairperson Jeff Lee, for example, had noticed months before Carl Knudsen's investigative report was published that records had been obtained showing misappropriations and possible, likely, thefts having occurred. With the evidence he had at his fingertips, did Mr. Lee call a special meeting? Did he take any actions to curb staff, protect documents, or protect public funds and assets he was entrusted with? No. Instead, he or your board gave ample time and opportunity for staff to hide and destroy incriminating evidence. That still appears to be the case today. The lawyer who advised the board for 20-some years did a huge disservice to the board and the citizens of this county to whom you are responsible for. By all appearances, he and his law firm have civil culpability in the IWMA's recently exposed corruption. Yet, this firm continues to be retained and relied upon for its expertise in deciding the IWMA's most sensitive and critical matters. Ironically, this firm is also being relied upon by the IWMA board to decide what documents or parts of their agency's documents are released to the public. Somehow, in the wake of all of the corruption we have seen at the IWMA, this law firm has emerged as a trusted member of the governance team. Your lawyer may tell you he is just making sure no sensitive private data is released, just like Bill Worrell and former legal counsel from the same firm you rely on today had advised that you had legal budgets, appropriations, and contracts, which you did not. That former lawyer and his firm gave you assurance that assets could be purchased without appropriations and given away as gifts. Whether by omission or by overt act, that lawyer condoned the expenditure of millions of dollars of public funds without the legal appropriations to do so. Now you have another lawyer from the same firm advising you and holding back, possibly destroying, public records that, what, might expose one of three staff members' Social Security numbers, or expose the IWMA to lawsuits, or, more likely, that might expose his law firm to civil liability. There is a problem with your legal counsel. There are conflicts of interest, perceived or real. You've had a past practice of leaving the fox in the hen house. Today, you continue that practice. Get new legal counsel and give us the transparency you promised and which you are absolutely responsible for. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Claire?
Good afternoon, Claire Mamakos, District 1. I'm up in Paso Robles, West Adelaide. Over the years, your board has been manipulated by unscrupulous staff and/or board members to serve personal and non-IWMA agendas. They have taken advantage of the unwieldy nature of your 13-member board and its mostly mundane ministerial duties. You've been abused. Like the perpetual victim, you seem to want more because today you are still being manipulated, abused by your legal counsel who takes advantage of your nature and makes you appear non-transparent. This statement should give you pause and you should be asking yourselves why you continue on the path of self-abuse. Ask yourself what needs to be changed, and for heaven's sakes, don't ask your lawyer. Here are some suggestions and considerations. Get new legal counsel from a different firm that hasn't already influenced you. Reduce the size of your governing board, but make sure it's still representative of all affected jurisdictions. Consider disbanding the IWMA and stop gouging ratepayers to fund in excess this unnecessary organization. Give a short deadline to your administrator to release public documents with minimal redaction based on best practices all public agencies follow. Redaction is not the lawyer's job. Have the courage to face and publicize the results of the forensic audit and follow through with wherever it takes you to get to the truth. And lastly, learn to keep your promises. Not only the ones you made sitting on this board, but also the ones you made when you took public office. Thank you.
Next up is Luke Dunn. Hello, greetings. Board members, hope you're all doing well in these tumultuous times. I just have a few things I'd like to put on the radar that aren't related to the agenda. I also sent you some emails. I apologize for sending you your probably already burdened emails or inboxes, but one of the emails with the title Planet People Waste Insight, I was going to recommend, to give you some context, I was hoping we could expand our cities or our communities' data collection services. So this first thing that I'm about to mention is Planet People Waste Insight, or Planet People, it's a waste characterization group that collects data on waste stream and also offers audits. They're based in LA. I'm not affiliated with this group, but simply using it, or I'm not employed by this group, I'm affiliated, but I was simply using this as an example on what a city could potentially employ to get some more data for these streams and services to ultimately expand them. There's another link that I sent y'all that has the title of sanfranciscoenvironment.org. This is another example of what cities could potentially do to expand an oversight group that can also, if you look at this link, it's also an RSVP for a training event for basically addressing this issue that I'm referring to. And there's actually already a company called Tetra Tech that's in San Luis Obispo. They have a larger scale services, but again, just kind of putting that on your radar. Another thing I wanted to bring to the board is something called community-based social marketing. This sort of design is something that other cities have deployed that basically hire or arrange for volunteers of the community to collect more data for the city in whichever manner that you would feel appropriate. But it seems to be a really successful model in other cities, and once again, that's a community-based social marketing scheme or plan or operation. I think I'll just relinquish the rest of my time and then hopefully see you on agenda item number 19. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn.
That is the end of our public comment for items not on the agenda. Just as a reminder, there is an ongoing investigation by the DA on this circumstance that was brought up quite often. So commentary can't be made. And then there was some questions around education and outreach by Ms. Sharp. I would encourage your feedback for us at the board level. Just, you can go to our website, iwma.com. There's actually a ton of material that we're trying to continually upgrade when it comes to outreach and education. We have a very large budget for that item. It's always hard to know how people disseminate information and what the best avenue is for getting that to people. So please call the office or email us and let us know if there's something that you're not seeing within that program that we could, you know, boost up a little bit. I think that's...
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
Can we ask, after hearing all the public comment, can we ask a question of our attorney? A question?
I would assume you can, yeah.
Yeah, well, go through you. I'm just wondering, coming into the new year, what is our time frame on that forensic audit and what all's going on? Are we going to have an update? Because... we're just sort of, I feel like we've just been waiting as well. I heard frustration from the public today that they haven't had any information, and it's been a long time.
You're right, Supervisor Arnold and directors of the board. It has been a long time. As you are aware, there is a district attorney investigation that is currently ongoing, and I have been in contact with Dan Dow about that. And I think that at this point, the direction that I believe I have been receiving from the board is to not do anything that would interfere with the district attorney's investigation. So I have been pushing the DA to move as much as I can.
But we just don't have any idea how long.
So, Ms. Arnold, we have regular closed session items, and we've been talking about this. So a lot of this gets covered in closed session. I don't want us to have that be exposed in this kind of format.
And I'm not trying to bring out anything that I shouldn't be talking about. I'm just talking about a time frame for when this may become public information. And you're saying no, we don't know when we'll have that or anything about that.
I do not have a specific time frame to give to you.
Yeah, thank you.
Anybody else? Okay. Now we'll close public comments. All right. Moving on to the executive director's report, Mr. Stayer, if you want to give us all your thoughts and everything.
Okay. Staffing, just a quick update there. We did not get a lot of qualified applicants for the board secretary position the first go around, so we reposted. Those have come back in, and we're seeing some very promising candidates. And we have advertised for the accounting position, but again, pending your approval today, hopefully, we have not interviewed that position. Both of these positions, when we get qualified applicant or make a selection, they will be hired with the benefits package that you approved back in November. So, and then the salaries have been, the job description and salaries have been vetted by county HR, and they are alignment with county as well. Oh, sorry. I'm seeing it here. There we go. And then just, again, keep you informed of everything. We have a holiday on Martin Luther King, January 20th, so the office will be closed, and I'm going on vacation for 2 weeks starting Friday. But I will have my cell phone with me, so if anything comes up, please give me a holler. And we did several RFPs, but the revenue audit, we had the kickoff meeting this week with the consultant, R3, and so they are going to be doing data collection requests from the haulers in the next few weeks, and they hope to then, based on that collection, go and do site visits and do some testing or audit procedures there on site. So that'll be in late February, and they hope to have a report back to us in late March. And then the strategic plan folks are here today, and we'll cover more about that here in a minute. And then I think most of you know that I also serve on some other solid waste roles throughout the state, and one of them is the Sierra Chapter Swanna Board, and I'm the secretary. I've been the secretary for a few years now. I was nominated to serve as the president coming up, for the next couple of years. So if there is no objection from your part, I will accept that nomination. I don't anticipate it to be any more time than I was putting in as secretary. So I think it should be something that shouldn't interfere with my duties here. Okay. And then I always like to let you know who we're talking to, what's going on in the community. So Cal Poly students have been, again, working on the CRV issue with us. And are they here yet? No. They have class. And so they have class before this meeting and after this meeting. So they have a huge presentation. They've done some great work. So when they get here, if it's okay with your pleasure, we will let them go whenever they get here. And then they have to go back to class to give us the results of the cost of the CRV system. And then we also have this idea of fixing the actual legislation. We're putting in some language there so the state can actually fund the center so they can afford to operate, because they can't make it based on just the nickel and dime recovery and the sale of the commodity at the end. They need a subsidy, and the state can do that. So CPSC is on the inside there, and let me remind you, we do have our strategic plan consultant in the room, so any of these topics that come up later, you feel free to hammer away at them. They've got insider information. So anyway, we work on that legislative fix, and then we also contacted Assemblyman Cunningham locally, and he's in support of the idea. He's actually thought of some ideas to fix it as well, and so he's going to contact Shaw, Yoder, Antwi, and CPSC and get the language from them, and so he can be a champion at our side as well. We canceled the monthly haulers meeting mostly because we're going to be requesting data from them. We didn't want to commandeer too much of their time. We're still working on the Ed Center agreements for Cold Canyon and HCI. Remember, we have a Ed Center that's being used. We've had it for some time at at Cold Canyon. We haven't had an agreement putting that formally, that use agreement. And HCI, we have money for it, and they built it, but we haven't started using it because we haven't formalized the contract. And then we've met with Slo County HR on the fact that we need a handbook at IWMA. So the county does not have an actual handbook because there are so many different bargaining units, but they gave us some examples of similar agencies. It's several that the county board of supervisors serve on, and so we're using those as templates, and so that will go back to them once we've reviewed it to align it with IWMA. And so we hope in February or March to bring you back a handbook that mirrors similar, it'd be very similar to county policies. And then that would apply to IWMA. And then lastly, we met with the city-county manager group. They meet monthly, usually at a breakfast. And so they invited us to speak about the polystyrene ordinance, SB 1383, and the CRV issue and our attempts to try and come up with a plan to fix it. And very receptive. They were really polite. Had a great meeting with them. And one of the other questions was regarding SB 1383 and the extensive amount of data that is going to be required to be submitted. And so they asked for the language that they could put in their franchise agreements or their contracts so that that data can just be uploaded. And Patty's going to talk more about that here in a minute. But anyway, it was a very positive meeting. So are there any questions or comments about meeting schedule and what we got going on so far? Okay. And then what's coming up is the strategic plan. So in the room here today is Rob Hilton and Morgan McCarthy, and they are really experts. So we really hit the jackpot with hiring, being able to hire them. But anyway, what we want to do with the strategic plan, and what I want to stress to you, is we need your input. We want you to be there, and there's going to be a series of interviews with you individually, and then we need you all to come to one meeting place for 4 to 5 hours. We'll probably have a sandwich lunch or something simple, but something so that you can stay in the room, and we have a nice, conducive, non-political work environment where it's, you know, we can cooperate and it's neutral. So that will be coming up in March. And I put on the right-hand side there just some of the considerations, things that we can look at. None of these are set in stone. Well, we do have to do 1383. But these are ideas for you to think about and get you prepared for. And this will be in your packet. This will be a part of the minutes after the meeting. And so with that, I would like to introduce Rob Hilton to speak on behalf of our strategic plan.
Great. Well, good afternoon, board. I'm very pleased to be here with you today. We're kicking off a really important process for your organization in doing this strategic plan.
see. This is not working for me. Wonder if we need to click on the slide. Ah, there we go. Thanks, Patty, to the rescue. So for most organizations, when we get brought in to do a strategic plan, if it's an organization that's been around for a while, we're updating a strategic plan. It's an organization that, you know, typically at its founding had a mission and vision and values that got set up. You guys didn't do that. Your agency, when it was founded, didn't go through some of those visioning steps and classic strategic planning stuff. And so as the RFP came out and we were looking at this opportunity to work with you, that was intriguing to me. And it looks like you have a big opportunity for a reset in your organization and to think about very existential stuff, like why are we here and what are our values and where are we going and what's the role of this organization. So that's exciting to me. I know you've been through some challenging times, and I think this is an opportunity to get to that reset for you. Why do we do strategic planning? Most of you have probably done it in the organizations you're here representing or in your private businesses. A big piece of it is organizational alignment. You as the governing board providing your vision and your direction and your values to your staff so that as they're doing their day-to-day work, they're guided by that bigger picture, that they're guided in making tough decisions that come in front of them every day, and that the values that you've told them are important are ones that they can carry forward in their day-to-day interactions with your constituents and as they're facing things, decisions that they need to make. And then lastly, anticipating the future. Most of strategic planning exercises are about looking classically 5 years out and figuring out what's going to be facing us and how do we organize ourselves and how do we approach these challenges. And I'll tell you, I mean, the list that Brooks just had up on your screen, we're in the most dynamic time that this industry has faced. We're in the most dynamic time that your organization has faced since it was founded. SB 1383 is creating massive, massive changes in the industry and how each of your residents and businesses and property owners are dealing with their stuff. The CRV system is really troubled right now for the first time since the bottle bill was passed. That's affecting access. We've got all these new materials like solar panels that you talked about and single-use plastics that we're trying to figure out. How do we manage these things responsibly? It is an incredibly dynamic time. And oh, by the way, the recycling market's cratered on us. So looking out into the future and figuring out what do we want to be and how do we get ourselves there and what's that role for this organization? That's exciting stuff for me, so I'll look forward to working with you on it. As we approach this, our starting point is we want to do a baseline assessment. As we come to you to make decisions about the mission and the vision and the values of the organization and the specific actions you would take, we want to make sure that you're well-informed in doing that and that it's not just a gut check about how does one person feel and how does another person feel and let's move forward on that, but that we've done a lot of benchmarking, that we've talked to the stakeholders, that we've talked to all of you, that we really understand the context that you're moving forward with so that you can make data-driven decisions about how to move forward rather than just gut-level decisions. So we're going to spend a bit of time, and I'll show you the timeline in a little bit, a bit of time doing that baseline assessment. It requires data from each of your agencies, and so you'll be seeing, if you haven't already, a request for information that we've provided to Brooks. And we may need your help in getting that data from your haulers, from your departments and your organizations, but that data is really critical in your ability to make good decisions about how we move forward. So look for that coming up. We'll do that baseline assessment. As was said, we'll interview each of you, and hopefully you can find about a half an hour to set aside for, we had talked about it being a call, but the more I think about it, I'd like to kind of be down here and be face-to-face with you if possible. So if we're able to get everybody into a close cluster of meetings, I think that would be preferable. But we're looking for about a half hour to spend some time with you to understand your specific perspectives individually before we get together as a group. And then, as Brooke said, we're going to get together in a retreat format, fairly low-key. We want it to be an environment where people are collaborative and in a good brainstorming space, so we'll find a good venue for that and get people together. But really the goal of that will be to come up with what is the mission of this organization? What is your vision as the governing board of where you want to be going forward and the role that you want this organization to take? And that could be from 0 to 100. I mean, it's all up to you guys. And then
in moving forward, what are those values that you have that you want to make sure staff uses day in and day out in making decisions? From that, we'll have your board's direction, and we'll work with staff on the specific tactical kind of day-to-day steps. What are the actions that are going to go into that strategic plan? And we'll scope that out. We'll do a big resource analysis to figure out if this is what we're going to be doing, what's that going to cost, what kind of resources do we need, what kind of staffing do we need, and what would that look like? And then obviously that'll come back to you. That won't be a staff product that just sort of stays on a shelf someplace. It's going to be your document, and we want to make sure you guys are bought into that. So we'll have another session with you guys to work through that. My clicker may be slow, so I don't want to... So one of the things that's really different, how many of you have done strategic planning in business environments before? A few of you? One of the big things in a business environment that they'll tell you, a strategic planning facilitator like me will come in and they'll say, you need to focus. You need a big, hairy, aggressive goal. You need five bold steps. You need bet the organization, you know, types of decisions or focus. In the public sector, it's different. In the public sector, we're not focusing on bet the organization, swing for the fences, wins. We're looking at how do we provide a broad base of public services in the most cost-efficient way that we can that's consistent with our mission. And so it's necessarily very different. Rather than looking at focusing in on things, sometimes you're looking a lot more at how do we leverage existing resources to get more out of them. And so for those of you that are used to doing this in a business environment, you'll find we're going to cover a lot more waterfront, even within the narrow scope of a waste management authority. We're going to cover a lot more waterfront on some of this stuff than you might in other settings in strategic planning. Nice slow pace to things. All right. So I've got up on the screen here, I think most of you can see it there in front of you, some classic generic goals and objectives for strategic planning processes. And they're sort of plain vanilla. And what we'd like to do today, if we can just, with the pleasure of the board, take maybe 5 or 10 minutes and get some input from you guys about what are your objectives for this process? What does a win look like for you out of this? How will you be satisfied that this process has been successful when we're sitting on the other end of it in several months? How do we ensure that we're delivering that to you? So, the pleasure of the board, I'd open it up to you to give me some feedback on that because that'll help me as I organize things.
How exactly do you want this input? Because we obviously have a large board to...
Whether folks want to just sort of chime in one by one or if you want to go end to end, up to you. It's your meeting.
Okay. Anything? Yeah. Go ahead, John.
I think it just serve our constituents and try not to overregulate. Basically, you know, we're here to conserve and restore our recyclables, but not to put such a burden on taxes that this becomes an issue. So that's for me.
Thank you.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, it's as a new member of the board, it's learning a lot about the issues surrounding the very dynamic situation that we're in here. I think it's an exciting time to be involved in waste management. I have a lot to learn, and I think it's extremely important to communicate what I learn and what we learn collectively with our communities. So that's the number one goal for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess I agree with what John Hammond, the one on the end, just said. You know, we have a lot of small businesses that are struggling to survive in this county and want to do things efficiently, but the rules are ever-changing. So I want an organization that helps that happen and facilitates things for the overall betterment of the county, but without placing all kinds of undue burdens and restrictions on constituents, whether they be consumers and end users and tipping fees that go up, et cetera, or the small businesses. And I don't want like a middle layer of bureaucracy in another organization that's created that's an unaccountable government organization. So that's what my goal would be.
I think it's going to be key to get a clear definition of the mission of this board, and so board members understand it. We've had instances where board members clearly did not, and a mission statement that we can communicate clearly to the public.
Thank you. That's great.
Okay, I had a chance to speak to you earlier, and I'm going to repeat for the board then what comments I made. One is, you take something like SB 1383, and frankly, I'm not convinced that it's realistic. I think it is written and imposed on us by people who are not in the business. They may be more, a little more idealistic than what's possible. And my recommendation is that we get more involved in the legislative process of making laws like this. The other end of that scale in my mind is to go out to the landfill, speak to John Ryan about how this actually occurs, this recycling business. And I think you'll find that in the long run, we're going to have some much more sophisticated machinery to do this job for us. And I would spend some of our time and effort meeting with manufacturers to learn how to do a better job of sorting our waste. And finally, I think that, and it was mentioned here twice already, was educating the public is key to this whole process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, for me, the big goal is really getting everybody on the same page from this board with a broad understanding of what it is that our organization does, what we're tasked with doing, both from a state regulatory level and for our entire county. You know, I think we've kind of lost the understanding of what the IWMA is, at least from a clarity standpoint, that we can impart that back onto our constituents and public, and handling the ever-growing issues that come with our waste stream. You know, we know from the China ban what that the downstream effect has created for our entire country. You know, I read about it literally on a weekly basis, and I think we ourselves need to understand how big those issues are in order to steer this and put basically create the efficiencies that we're looking for as a government agency. And I think that's why I'm hoping the strategic plan can really narrow down that focus so that we're not going off on these various tangents that just keep us from the mission.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I would echo those same concerns about members understanding the agency and also members understanding the state that we happen to be in and the size of our county and what our voice is potentially strongest in. So, yeah, I think we need to focus on what it is that the IMWMA has done in the past policy-wise, what we can do in the future to affect change in our waste diversion here locally.
Great, thank you. I think in terms of defining the clear mission and the scope of responsibility is extremely important. I appreciate what Councilmember Hammond addressed, which is in terms of talking about a clear mission, scope of responsibility, we also probably want to address what is not in that. because I think that is where we perhaps run a get into confusion over what it is we should be dealing with or not. And Mr. Gomez mentioned about being a more efficient agency, and the purpose of our existence, and just seeing here again right in front of me now, again, we all these cities, the special districts in the county, entered into this arrangement so that we wouldn't each individual agency be responsible to do all of these bureaucratically intensive things. And so I think, I mean, that's why I agree with kind of what everybody has said really here, that I want to, you know, include in this focus what it is we're not supposed, you know, we should not be focusing on as much as what it is we should be focusing on. So, thank you. Good comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, as a newcomer to this party, I'll be brief. I really don't have anything new to offer other than definitely a clear mission statement is very important for me as a newcomer. Also, I think just from my own personal experience, getting CRV and the recycling issues straightened around, I think would make a lot of people's lives a lot easier. And then just from what I've heard here today, I would say my own personal opinion on this would be to regain and keep the public trust. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks for asking. I've been on this board for a year now, and I'm still struggling trying to learn what my expectations are as a board member any given time. So I appreciate the thought of more of a clarity as to our vision and mission statement so we can talk as a group and at least have some commonalities and some consensus in where we feel we need to go. I think clarity for the end users is sometimes confusing, and so really making sure that we're able to put out messages that are educational, and there's not, I'm learning that trash is a very complicated issue, and much more so than I ever expected, but I think there's a lot of confusion out there as to what we are asking people to do or not to do, so I think making sure that that is out there, and also making sure that we, whatever we legislate, we live within our means, and we have the ability to make a decision, and if we have processes that need some type of accountability, we use that to what we have the ability to enforce and use and do. So those are my biggest issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
Last but not least. Save the best for last, I'm sure.
Yeah. So I agree with most of my colleagues. I do believe this body was created to enact programs that help our constituents comply with state mandates, and I think that includes reforming the CRV program and advocating wherever we can and doing whatever we can. Programs that help our constituents provide opportunities to our constituents to dispose of hazardous waste, things that can't go to the landfill, programs that help our constituents and educate them so that we are reducing the materials sent to the landfill. So programs, this is education and programs, and of course the state mandates sometimes come with more legal terms. But and lastly, and I think Councilmember Bright alluded to regaining trust or regaining a more positive perception of this body, and I don't know if she meant it this way, but I think that the forensic audit and some of the transparency, that's a project that we're working on, so I hope when we have our strategic planning we can continue to work on that and try to see what we can do to come to some kind of resolution there. So that's my input.
Well, thank you all so much for taking the time to do that. That input just made the next steps in the process a lot more effective for me, and it'll help me organize things as we get going. Question?
One other thing I'd like to add, too, and I didn't hear from everybody else, but it's something we've used over the years, is local control.
Yep.
In other words, we all sit on this board because we represent our particular cities, and we want to see some sort of input from our local constituents with what we do in our county. So not just having the state or whoever telling us what to do.
Yep. That's great. Well, again, thank you very much. I will close with just a little bit of a timeline to give you some expectations about where we are and what we're doing. So we came down actually in December for your last board meeting and met with Brooks and used the day productively to get things started. We've gotten a data request off to him, and so he's working to get that through each of your cities and the haulers. We'll spend the next 3 months really in baseline assessment, going through the numbers, really distilling down what the data is telling us, having those interviews with you guys, and then we'll get together in March sometime when we can find a time when you're all available to take that 4 to 5 hours for the retreat. We'll get together with the retreat, and we'll do the visioning and the mission and the values in that session. And then we go off with staff for the next couple of months working on that scoping analysis. What are the specific actions going to be? As we were talking about this, we were reminded that bringing you an action plan in August missed the budget timeline a little bit, and so we've moved forward the process of doing the resource analysis, the estimates of what's it going to cost and how many people might you need, so that you would have that in early May and start to have a preview into some of this, but it would also be timely for any budget discussions that you're having. Again, you don't need to make those commitments, but we felt like getting you those actions several months after you'd made your budget decisions might handcuff you for a little bit. So we're pulling that forward a little. But our goal is to bring the action plan to you around August in its final form and get your input on that, and we'll make any revisions that you direct at that point. So with that, I'm available for any questions, and I'm here for the rest of the meeting if you have questions on other things. Really excited to be working with you guys, and thank you for having us.
Patty, you up next?
I'm up next.
All right.
Okay, so this has to do with the hazardous waste quarterly report. This is the first time we've ever brought a report like this before the board. Moving forward, we will do this quarterly, as well as an education and outreach report, so that you have detailed data at your fingertips on what the IWMA is actually doing. As you look through this report on page 7 of your board agenda packet, it goes over the number of facilities we have for HHW collection, public education that we are currently doing, methods of disposal. Once we collect the material, where does it actually go? There are three different methods of disposal, with recycling being first and foremost. But there is incineration and fuel blending as well. Some things we just can't recycle. Moving forward from that, it lists the locations, hours of operations. You can see both for residents and for businesses. We are talking about expanding those hours and modifying them to make them more convenient for the public. Moving forward, you may see some more information on that. We have one hazardous waste collector countywide, Stericycle. Their contract expires in June of 2023. They have a total of 9 employees running these facilities in our county. 3 of them are full-time, 6 are half-time. It also lists my staff time involved in these facilities. As you move further through the report, it shows the number of participants. And believe me, 2,000 for a quarter is great. It's really popular and will continue to grow. We see it growing on a quarterly basis. Of that 2,097 were businesses alone. And these are small businesses who want to safely and affordably get rid of their hazardous waste. This is an awesome program for those guys. Moving forward into this report, if you take and delve into the numbers, it shows you the total fees associated with the disposal, collection of the hazardous waste, as well as what it equates to per pound. And right now, we're about 87 cents per pound for disposal. And that includes staff time, everything. So we'll watch that number closely. Look for ways we can reduce it, or as the program grows, that may change, especially with commodities being more expensive to get rid of. We'll keep you posted. We also have some unique programs in this county. We have used oil collection centers. Now, this is a statewide program, but in San Luis Obispo County, we have 29 certified centers where people, if they can't make it to an HHW facility, can go in and drop off oil and used oil filters for free. Electronic waste recycling is listed here. We also have the retail take-back programs, batteries, fluorescent lights, mercury thermostats, paints, unwanted medication, and sharps. Any store or pharmacy that has to do with sharps or medications, you can walk in and have free disposal. These are super important programs for this county, especially if somebody can't make it to one of our facilities during the hours of operation. And that concludes this hazardous waste report. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Doesn't look like it. Oh, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm just wondering about, since you brought up the 87 cents per pound for the hazardous disposal cost, how does that compare to other agencies? Do you know?
Well, you know, when I look across the board, and sometimes people are really, they hold it close, they're not necessarily willing to share that kind of information. But in general, if you look at like CalRecycle studies where they're able to pull that information, it's really, really pretty good. Sometimes it's about 97, down a little bit less, smaller communities, maybe with less facilities, because we do have 6 outlets. Mm-hmm. We're trying to make it as convenient as possible, and that does raise the cost a little bit. But as you can see from the documentation, the most expensive component of this is disposal. Mm-hmm. That's why moving forward, we're looking forward to maybe doing reuse, where people can bring in stuff, and then we can actually, if it's a great can of, say, paint or WD-40, brand new, right, that people can take that home with them for free, so we don't actually have to pay for the recycling or disposal of that.
That makes good sense. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
Nope.
Okay, then we'll move on to Glenn Burdett. They are doing our annual audit, the FY, 17-18, I get my years mixed up, excuse me, and we're working to close that audit out. moving forward to the conclusion of that. And then moving down further, we recently purchased a forklift. Here's a picture of the old forklift. Now, normally it does look beat up, but we would still be using it except for the entire electrical system fried it. And that's out at our Napomas facility, so we had to buy a new one. Here's the new forklift. That's the amount, $28,750. We did do it through bidding, and piece of equipment works absolutely beautiful. Next, moving on to SB 1383. This is in your agenda packet. You'll see roughly 20 or so slides, and these slides are supplied by the state agency who monitors waste and recycling, CalRecycle. At the last city county managers meetings that both Brooks and I attended, your executive director asked the managers if they would like the IWMA to take the lead on SB 1383 or if they wanted to hire staff and do it individually at each city level and the county. As you can imagine, they all wanted the IWMA to take the lead. Now, that puts a real big burden for data collection. And here, Rob will explain that further on what really actually has to be collected for this piece of legislation coming forward. Most importantly, though, we started looking at what it would require, what kind of data platform we would need to host all this information coming in, because the state of California has to have access to it within 10 days. And so it's haulers putting in information. It's your purchasing agencies at the county and city levels putting in information. It's your compliance officers putting in information. It's massive. So when we looked at three different components or three different companies who would offer a platform that maybe could manage this data, we're looking at roughly about $20,000 to $30,000 a year, just FYI. Now, it's an astronomical amount. But if we do it as a region under the IWMA, we only have to do that once. Otherwise, as Rob reminded me, each city and county has to purchase that data platform for themselves. So in essence, it makes good sense. Does anybody have any questions on that?
Did any of the cities and or county offer paying for that program that we would be leading?
We did not negotiate payment.
I realize you didn't negotiate that right off the bat, but was that even discussed?
No. No.
I look forward to that discussion.
Yes. Yes. Any other questions on this topic?
No, I had a question on an earlier topic because I think this is your last topic.
No, actually, I do have one more sneaking.
Go ahead, one more, and I'll step back then.
Okay. So what I wanted to talk to you, and it's further down in the agenda, it's agenda item number 13, if I'm not mistaken. It's the Central Coast Partner of Water Quality Partner, or Partners for Water Quality, agreement that we are about ready to work forward and hopefully sign with them. And it's a social media campaign that they're going to be doing that relates to stormwater. We promised this in the budget. The reason I bring it up now is because you may, all the Board of Supervisors are familiar with the Bluebed project that was brought before the board. Excellent program. Ann's here in the audience, and she did a stellar pilot program to hand out garbage bags, blue in color, to a homeless encampment and collect those bags and dispose of them. Self-policing. They were actually self-policing, cleaning up their own camp. Great program. Loved it. Loved what I saw. She did an outstanding job. Kudos. Wade Horton sent us an email recently asking if we would take on that project. And we talked to the executive committee about that, and the executive committee asked us to not take the lead, but to possibly help with funding. So I just wanted to give the board, the entire board, an FYI. That's probably the direction. And do you have anything to add to that, Brooks?
No, but we put some of the basics up there on this slide, just in case you're not part of the county and you didn't see the results of the Blue Bag program. And so, and we just wanted you to know, see where the other agencies are contributing to the litter issue.
And that's the Central Coast
IWMA,
Partners.
You as a board are contributing. Correct.
Right. Any questions on this?
Well, actually, I was going to pull item 13, so that'll for a question. So this will be a good time.
Okay.
Because I was confused in reading in the staff or in the agenda that the, whatever it is called, the Central Coast Partners for Water Quality, is an agreement with the cities and the county again.
Then
the city of SLO is the
lead?
Sort of lead agent or something. But I was unclear who was actually, it was like we're contracting in a circle with ourselves or something. Who is actually doing the work? Who?
It's actually the city and county. They formed an MOU, so
okay. They're
working all together as a team to do the work.
No, I understand that, but I mean, it's like all of us here. We don't go out and do any work, but we represent the agencies that have signed up to this.
Stormwater staff.
Okay, so the stormwater staff of the county or
and cities
and okay
and each of the cities who are involved in this.
Okay, so I noticed that, for example, for our city, our deputy public works director signed on as the member, and the agreement was signed by our city manager, as it was by each of the cities. But I picture Central Coast Partners for Water Quality sounds like a nonprofit that goes out and helps do creek cleanup days and things like that, and things like this. But I mean, our individual city representatives, it's not at the deputy public works director level. We're not out carrying blue bags or handing them out.
No.
Is it staff within our respective public works entities that we're doing that?
Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry, the blue bag is
totally
this is
different.
Where the confusion
I'm
comes in.
It's, blue bag
it was
done.
County done. The blue bag was a totally separate project. And
okay. Forgive
me, Ann, I know you're in the audience if I misrepresent you guys here, but step up to the podium. And it's a totally different project that was done by Ann Glebsky. And she's county, stormwater staff, pilot program. Totally different than the Central Coast Partners for Water Quality, although she is involved in that too.
Yeah, so
when I see Fred Audie there.
Hold on one second. Before we're kind of getting off into a tangent, because that's a completely different program compared to the blue bag.
You're correct.
Mr. Hill does have a question on the blue
bag. As much as I love talking about forklift policies and other mundane activities, I would actually like to know why the executive committee, and maybe we could bring this back for discussion, and the blue bag program, which you know I've now seen briefed on probably four times, and Ann and I see Freddie from the city, great people have been involved. This has been a model program. It seems something that would make sense for, you know, the basic thing, and I'm sure Ann will speak to that, the basic difficulty in terms of repeating it, though I can tell you as lead on homeless services in our community that the requests and desires to see this repeated is coming to us from every community, city and towns, special districts as being part of that too. This is a successful program that needs essentially an agency oversight. And so what I'm asking the executive committee is, this is the kind of thing that I think we should be talking about at the board here, because this is the kind of program that would be of enormous benefit. And you know, not to cut off the any discussion that Ann might have, but I mean the basic difficulty that we have, that Ann has, is that she has a lot of other responsibilities. She can't oversee this, but the program showed itself as a pilot program to be enormously successful. And one of the biggest challenges that I know that I hear, and I think other people do hear from our cities and towns about the impacts of homelessness, is the impacts of encampments on not just our waterways, which is why Ann, you know, ended up being the lead on this because of her job, and she did a great, mm-hmm. terrific way of, but also because it's impacting everything. And so, and it really is an issue that comes down to it, and they can speak to it, but it comes down to collecting garbage and getting homeless folks to participate in this, collecting, you know, as we've seen, an enormous number of sharps that create terrible hazards. And so from my perspective, I think that this is the kind of discussion we should have at the board, because it is a program that your cities and towns are asking us to replicate. And so that's something I hope that we can think about agendizing, and I don't know if Ann's at the mic, so I'll let the chair take it from there. But, you know, that's essentially my understanding, and is that we need an agency to oversee it. And then we can figure out, because there's probably many more encampments than we'll be able to get to, but there are encampments having pretty difficult impacts on our waterways and our downtowns and others throughout the entire community. And this has proven to be quite an effective solution, or at least quite an effective way towards longer term solutions. So that's my spiel.
Yeah, and I think that's very fair. I think in to clarify, there wasn't something brought to the executive board and we said, no, we don't want to talk about this. Mm-hmm. It was basically this, what you see presented. My big concern was, how do we as an agency of our size be the lead for a program that is fairly robust, that even our cities have had difficulty, I think, controlling. And I'm all for the discussion, especially if we can play a role in it. I want to know how we be the lead agency, what is the cost, and what does that do for the rest of our programs? And so we may need to have that discussion as a board and with staff as far as what does that even look like. So
That's what I would say. Obviously, wouldn't want to. It wouldn't make sense to commit until we had a better sense of what that would look like. But I do think that that's a valuable discussion. And I know from hearing from working with some of the folks in your cities and in your districts and such that this is, especially since Ann and teams, our CAT team and Freddie and people like that have been involved, have done presentations. The follow up keeps coming, which is, hey, how do we see that? So that's why it's come towards IMWMA as a natural, potentially natural place, but it's certainly worthy of a good discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Ann's up, but that's Ann Gillespie.
I think I'm Ann Gillespie. I'm the County Stormwater Program Coordinator. It sounds like Agenda Item 13 is probably going to be pulled for consent, so I think that probably I can come back and clarify at that time. What item 13 is for, and it is not related to the Blue Bag pilot effort or the Blue Bag program. It is a community-based social marketing requirement that has been imposed on all of the cities as well as the county. And Charles, I can answer any questions you have about that. I believe probably when we pull 13 from consent.
Yes.
Okay.
That is the appropriate area.
I'll stay close.
Great. Perfect. All right, so do we have any more questions on the Blue Bag scenario?
Could we see it as a future agenda item? Ultimately, my desire is just, and I know that they're here for 13 as well, which is not necessarily the same thing, but I do think it'd be worthy, if it's been discussed at least in a very basic way at the executive committee, I do think it'd be worth talking about as a full board, because I assume that if we can get it on a future agenda, members here will talk to their cities and districts and probably get some helpful feedback.
Yeah. All right.
I just have a question. Full disclosure, I'm completely lost in this whole thing. Are we actually discussing item 13 right now?
No.
Okay, so we just referred to that and then brought this up. This feels like four or five different things all rolling around right now.
Because there was a bit of a crossover just because there is a budget item that is Central Coast Partners.
Yeah, so, but that is item 13. I mean, it's on here kind of.
It was basically just to show what we put into financially for litter abatement. This doesn't also include what we pay EcoSlo for the various or helpful in those same things.
Okay, so when we
I think it would have been more appropriate had we put EcoSlo on there, since that's a budgetary item that we actually have committed to, if I'm not wrong, correct? Yeah. So.
Okay. So we'll item 13 will be coming up, and that's when we'll be talking about the stormwater and the program, which is really just a social media mandated program. Is that okay? I'm better now. Thank you. Answering those questions.
Cool.
I had a question going back because I think this is the end of your spiel.
Okay. Now we're at the end. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Patty. Always a good report. Back on the annual audit by Glenn Burdett, most of our cities were getting our audits. They usually come in December, January timeframe. Mm-hmm. I missed you saying when they would have that done. Of course, that's fiscal year 18-19, I assume. Because that will come to us as a board. We'll get the entire report
thing
to read.
Every time we get an audit, you'll see it in completion.
Yeah. Okay, but would we expect that in February, or do you know?
Excellent question. We're trying to make it, or what's the word? Have them close the audit as fast as possible so that we can get that to you as fast as possible. But I don't have a definite date.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Aaron, can I ask one more quick question before we leave this slide?
Certainly.
I'm not real clear, and I hate to keep taking up too much time, but what exactly is the Central Coast Partners for Water Quality? Is that a how is that formed? I mean, is it a legal entity, or is it a JPA, or is it a loosely knit?
It's the county, and every single one of the cities have signed an MOU.
Okay, it's an MOU. You said that, and I'm putting it together now. Thank you. And
just to provide a little bit of background, Freddie Audi, City of San Luis Obispo, Stormwater Coordinator, working with Ann from the county as well. So we banded together to form the Central Coast Partners for Water Quality. So all the cities and the county have gotten together to advance the stormwater initiatives and programs so that we have a common voice moving forward. Okay. Instead of each individual city doing their own kind of little different thing, we figured that it would be more effective and efficient to all get together. So as part of this, we did sign our MOA because we didn't have that officially before. It was kind of just a handshake.
Yeah.
And so moving forward with the agreement, especially with IWMA, it was a great opportunity for all of us to actually have that codified agreement amongst all the cities that we are working together for a common message to educate the community on stormwater issues, litter issues, and all that kind of stuff. So we're a collection of basically all the cities in the county.
And those other agencies, Fish and Wildlife, so all that, did they sign on it? I'm sure I even voted on
this. That's the blue bag.
That's blue bag. So right.
So we're the bottom,
bottom? Okay.
Half.
Yep, and you all worked on the blue bag. That's why you're on. That's why this slide is a combination?
Not all the cities identified in table
no,
one.
No, but I mean the Central Coast Partners for Water Quality?
Nope.
No.
Okay. Not on the blue bag. So okay. That was just the top bullet point was the coordinators up there.
Okay. And so when we're getting down here to talk about the $25,000 in the budget going to the Central Coast Partners for Water Quality, that wasn't the blue bag. That
correct.
Was for...
That's different.
Well, that was just for you, just to support you in your other efforts.
To support our community-based social marketing outreach program.
Social marketing. We're back to that.
For the stormwater program.
Okay.
So
thank
blue bag
you.
is a component of the stormwater program, but not... Not those are two separate items.
Okay, thank you.
Top, half, and bottom.
Thank you for helping me out here.
No problem.
All right.
Thank you. Got it.
I think so. All right, we're moving on to the consent agenda. I do have public comment on one item, and then it sounds like we are going to be pulling. Do you want to pull item 13 for discussion, or do you just have a question?
Yeah, I just want to clarify a question on it.
Okay.
I also have a question on just two of the items. They don't need to be pulled. I just have questions.
Okay. Who wants to go first?
I read this, you know, it's got the MOU attached and where each city signed, et cetera. But I was unclear who, and this is for the purpose, this is on item 13, of going out and doing some public education that's required under the stormwater permit. And since each city is a permittee, it's cheaper for us to band together. But I was still unclear in my mind in reading this. IWMA is essentially contracting with this MOU-created body, the Central Coast Partners for Water Quality, which consists of our collective cities and county. Who's actually going to go out and do that public education? Is there going to be a further contract with a PR firm or something? Who's actually going out and doing that public education, if you will?
So one of the deliverables identified in the agreement with IWMA was to select a contractor. So this agreement is coming through the City of San Luis Obispo, basically under the auspices of the Central Coast Partners for Water Quality. So now all of us will get together, if this is approved and the agreement is signed, the Central Coast Partners for Water Quality will get together, and we're in the process of developing an RFP to be sent out to agencies, social marketing agencies like Verdin or somebody else like that, so that we can get proposals from them to come back in for all of us to evaluate, and then we will select a firm to help us so that it's not, here again, each individual city doing that outreach. We'll have a central contractor doing a unified outreach for the entire county so that we have a consistent message moving forward.
Perfect. That answered exactly what I wanted to understand. Thank you.
Super.
Thank you. So first, under item 14 regarding the credit card policies,
Specifically, I'm wondering if there are any examples of restricted purchases. Do you give your employees? I'm looking at. I'm thinking about like alcohol. I was the buyer for San Luis Coastal School District, and I administered our credit card program. Of course, Brandon, we had probably 50 credit cards issued, so I had to be very specific as to what was an authorized purchase and what was not. So that is the basis of my question here.
We don't have any specific restrictions set like that, but it has to be related to agency function and purpose. And there's no way any alcohol is ever going to be related to an IWMA function or purpose. So that would be something that would immediately require reimbursement from the employee or disciplinary action up to and including termination.
Okay, and I guess because there's only three credit cards are being issued, you feel it's
get a credit card that is restricted by each category code.
Yes.
And you have larger agencies probably have that, but that's more expensive and burdensome for an agency of this size. So our idea is every single transaction is posted in your agenda every single month. So you see every single transaction that's made. And so if it slips by us, it's going to be on here as well. But yeah, we're going to self-police it, and the supervisor of each employee has to sign off on it, and then I have to sign off on it, and then the executive committee or the board chair has to sign off on it. So I think it's getting reviewed several times.
We're not going to see an itemized receipt.
No, you see the statement of all the actual transactions, every single transaction. So if it's for whatever restaurant, that will immediately probably draw a red flag in general. But if we're traveling, then it would be associated with that.
Okay. We're big on transparency here.
Yes.
Yes. We're doing it.
I appreciate
it,
that. Okay. So then I guess the point I'm trying to get to is that so you expect that your employees are familiar with what is and what is not an acceptable purchase.
We will review that with them if this policy is approved.
Okay, very swell. Thank you. Then may I continue?
Yeah.
Okay,
you have another item?
So then item 15, my other question, as a buyer, of course, I'm wondering about the low bid was over $8,000 less than the other two bids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what we found is that this contractor was unwilling to actually put in any permitting in it and a few other things. We felt like it just wasn't, I mean, we just, having staff look over, it just wasn't smacking right. And when we asked for more information, they were unwilling and reluctant. And so, yeah, we did not go with the low bid.
I'm talking about the fencing.
On the fencing?
Not the concrete pad. The fencing, there were three bids, two were for $18,000-something, and then the low bid was $10,000. I'm just wondering, that just kind of stuck out to me, because generally when you see a bid that is so much lower than the other two,
mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering if why.
Well, you know, it just seemed like when we talked to these folks that they were legit and they had given us a legitimate bid. We actually went out twice with them, and I actually had another staff member go out with me just to make sure that we were talking the same language. Mm-hmm. Just worked out that way.
I mean, I know Central Coast Fence. They've done a lot of work. I know that.
They have.
Okay, very good. We just
wondered. They are. They are.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
All right, so we do have a public comment on item number 8, if you want to take care of that, and then we can move the whole agenda after that. Lucille Bosco? Looks like we don't have any comments on that. All right, so I will entertain a motion.
Move approval of consent.
We've got a motion and a second. We'll do a roll call.
Adam Hill?
Yes.
Bruce Gibson?
Yes.
Debbie Arnold?
Yes.
Charles Werbo?
Yes.
Lynn Compton?
Yes.
Jeff Heller?
Yes.
Robert Enns?
Yes.
John Hammond?
Aye.
Karen Bright?
Yes.
Keith Storton?
Yes.
President Gomez?
Yes.
It passes.
All right, passes. Regular agenda, meaning I approve item number 17, approve amended IWMA board meeting schedule for year 2020.
And President Gomez, can we back up one second?
Sure.
We had hoped to, during the oral report portion and not knowing it would take this long, have the students who had a window and had to go back to class, and so now they've had to go back to class, so we missed the opportunity for them to present. But we do have some data that they showed regarding the CRB, and we were hoping to get some direction from the board under the oral report portion of the agenda. So if we could, we'll go back to the oral report.
Okay. Going back to the oral report.
Okay, so we had engaged with the Cal Poly Engineering students, the Systems Optimization Club, and they have been refining this model over the past few months to tell us what's going to be the cheapest option if the board's direction was to try to reopen convenience centers for citizens to go back and get their money for the bottles and cans. So right now the only option, there's only one place in the county left open, and so we do not have physically have the resources at IWMA, so we would need to have somebody else do this for us. So what would be the cheapest option? So they looked at some stationary options, and so for example this one is San Luis Obispo, and they were looking at renting them for, these are available spaces, and this is the actual cost they got from a realtor. And the second one was AG. You could split up this Kmart and not get the whole thing, just a roughly a 1,250 square feet. And then a location in Atascadero. And so here's what the map would be like if you chose to operate three facilities, you know, try to cover as much geographic of the geographic areas population areas possible. And again, they have all the data on that and the other assumptions. They could cover that. The next option was to have a mobile system that would rotate around the county. So this is a little more difficult in communicating to people when you're going to be there and what hours you're going to be there, but would cover more ground. And so this was six locations that they said they could potentially do for us with a truck. And so they did a cost analysis, and again, they some basic assumptions here. But it would be more expensive because they did not include managerial overhead, and that's not necessarily our managerial, but you have to turn in paperwork and submit reports for this to get the money from CalRecycle. So if you had the San Luis, I'll just narrow it down. They were going to cover this in detail, and I'm sorry, I'm not the expert on their slides. But the San Luis Obispo location, they were proposing that it would cost between $143,000 and $159,000 for a year. So roughly $10,000 a month. The pilot, non-pilot, depends on whether we could be able to get a grant to help fund this from the state. And so the five-year cost, and again, you would have to, you know, our idea is that if you would do this, you would really need to start and continue to do this. It'd not be good to start and stop this type of program. People will rely on it very quickly. The Atascadero location was still a little cheaper, but it's still over $10,000 a month. And this is the mobile locations. That was a little cheaper, but there would be fewer hours at location, but then it would cover more ground. But again, it would still be about $10,000 per month to do that. And so then they looked at leasing a truck and what the break-even analysis, whether you should lease it or buy it. And then they also looked at reverse vending machines. And so each machine costs about $15,000, $16,000, and you would need one of each kind, one that takes the glass versus the plastic and aluminum. And so for $670,000, that pays for the machines, and you would get 20 locations, but that would not truly cover the cost of maintaining the machine and servicing it. So when it gets full, there's a ram in there that compresses them and consolidates. It's a baler, small baler inside the machine. But then that's got to be collected and hauled down to Santa Maria for redemption. So it would be more expensive than this. Okay, so the bottom line here, and we have Rob here if you have any questions about this. We have two options on the table, or multiple, but we've been really looking at two. Do we, as a board, want to establish redemption centers and fund those? And you see the cost is about $10,000 a month plus. Or do we want to go with a legislative fix? And the legislative fix is approximately what we've been asked to budget is $5,000 a month from February to August. So that'd be 8 months, about $40,000. And then we would partner with another county, similar IWMA agency, specifically Alameda County has said that they would do it. And then we would work with Shaw, Yoder, Antwi, or some lobbyists like that, and get a consultant, the California Product Stewardship Council, to help draft language and coordinate with CalRecycle to have language that they would support that would amend the actual program so that CalRecycle could actually pay CRV centers enough money to be able to operate on their own and not have us contribute money for that. But getting legislative support like that would cost money, and that's where the $40,000 we would ask to put in the budget if we went that way. Do you have any comments? Do you want to say anything, Rob?
I don't know how deep you guys have gotten into this beyond just the convenience centers are gone and people don't have the access to the service that they used to. I've got clients all over the state that are wrestling with this issue. Typically where public agencies are intervening and providing this service, it's because they've got a transfer station or a landfill or a recycling facility, something that is already existent that you can add this function to. And even some of those public agencies that have those facilities are actually stopping doing the CRV themselves because of the additional cost and the lack of funding from the state. I'm very supportive of the legislative fix approach. I've been working on that with the state for the last couple of years, and we've had a couple of decent bills that died along the way. It's not a money problem. The fund has got hundreds of millions of dollars sitting there waiting to be dispersed. The problem is they aren't resetting the formula quickly enough to catch the falling knife and help these operators stay solvent. As Brooke said, you know, the trick with these things is once you get them up and running, it's a community resource. It's something that people are going to count on. And so to the extent that you can find ways to stimulate these to come back into existence through real enterprise models that are supported by the state on a long-term basis, on a fiscally responsible basis, they're going to be longer lasting, and you're going to have less questions over time about do we keep this open, do we shut it down, do we move it, what do we do? But the entire state is going through this right now, and it's really about finding those good partners and fixing the bottle bill. We've got to get payments reset every 6 months, not every 12 or 36. And so that's I know Alameda County is working on that. I know counties all over the state are working on that, but it's a tough one.
So on the legislative side, with the product stewardship group, with the entire state struggling with this, why... I still am struggling with why we in Alameda are the only ones that are looking to propose, or is everybody doing it just not through that group?
You're not the only ones working on it. LA County, for example, has been working on it using sort of direct contact with their assembly members and state senators and things like that. Frankly, there are three or four different competing groups that have visions for what this would look like. The Container Recycling Institute that focuses on bottle bills around the country and their performance has one vision. CPSC has a different vision. Californians Against Waste, who started the bottle bill all those years ago, has a different vision. And the governor's office has said, this thing is so far broken, we're not patching it anymore. We need to throw the whole thing out and reform it. I don't know that I agree with because of how hard that is, but there's a point to be made there. And so it's part of the problem is classic Sacramento. And so frankly, having different voices and different lobbyists coming together and pushing on this from different angles may help. Santa Cruz County, I know, is also working on this, and they were actually looking at getting a lobbyist themselves, so using their county lobbyist to work on it for them. They've been supporting two nonprofits that have been running all of their buyback centers, and it's costing them $500,000 a year at this point. So
this is basically our end, not having a lobbyist.
Yeah.
And, you know, partnering with Alameda and hopefully maybe some more groups.
Yes, just helping reduce the cost.
Yeah. If I could, Mr. Chair, I mean, I think the only responsible way is to actually go the legislative fix. We don't have the ability to be overseeing recycling centers. That's just not. I mean, as much as we'd like to, that's just not what's going to be sustainable. So I think that's what we should do. We should invest in the big effort. And the other reason is, of course, if you start to demonstrate that you try to do it, the state will just
be happy enough to keep letting you do that while they collect the fees. This is completely against what the purpose of the entire program is. So I think we should just, I think the executive committee should work with Brooks and move forward on the legislative lobbying. I know that not just other cities and counties are pushing on this, but so is League of Cities and CSAC. So it should, I think this is the best way for us to make our voice heard. Really couldn't get behind us trying to take on this responsibility, which I think we, if you were to actually provide numbers, you would show us soon getting to arrears within a year or so.
Mr. Chairman, I concur, and I would hope my colleagues agree we could direct staff to pursue the legislative angle on this. I'd like to see if we can't leverage other actions that are out there, in particular Shaw Yoder Antwi's, the county's lobbyist. I would hope we could add that to the county's efforts at somewhere less than $40,000. That's more than half of what we pay our federal lobbyist in a year. So if we could have you, we can help get you in touch with others in the county who are dealing with Shaw Yoder and maybe the cities similarly through the league. Let's just make sure we're being efficient in our use, because us spending $40,000 of our own probably gets lost in the noise given all the rest that's going on. So I think we should get there. And just, if I might, Mr. Chairman, just time management. I'm afraid I'm expected in Cambria at 4. I'm going to have to leave at 3:30, and I know we've got other weighty things in front of us.
Yeah. Mr. Howard?
Yes, I have no opposition to legislative action on this, but I'm wondering if the Cal Poly students, I'm sorry they're not, weren't able to stay, I'm wondering if maybe we could ask the Cal Poly students to look at it in a different way. The last CRV center I went to was a storage container parked behind a building, about as affordable a space as you can get. We have household hazardous waste stations throughout the county, 6 of them, one in Morro Bay, storage containers. I'd like to suggest maybe to the Cal Poly students look at an option of a storage container type CRV structure coupled at our 6 locations where we have the household hazardous wastes and see what those numbers might look like. So that's my brainstorm for this afternoon.
And I would say that's the $110,000 a year cost. That's not paying for the location. That's just paying for the truck and the two staff to drive around and provide the service. So it'd still be about $10,000.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with Mr. Gibson's comments about perhaps using the existing lobbying access that we have. But my question to you is, what are you going to have another committee meeting? Because we kind of had a committee, which in the end really was primarily the students, because some of us were out of town and couldn't attend. But were you going to have another ad hoc committee meeting on this?
We can, but I, hearing what I'm hearing today, I would think that I would just kind of vet the legislative fix a little more, and using mm-hmm. Rob as a resource, we would try to see if there's other people that we can partner with to reduce the cost and piggyback with somebody else. And okay. I think that's a logical way to go.
All right. Thank you.
All right, got enough direction. We can get this thing moving. All right, item number 17, the amended schedule for 2020.
Thank you, President Gomez. So there were 2 dates that we don't have access to the calendar. We're told what dates are available that work with the second Wednesday for y'all. And so February and November, we had to choose alternate dates. And so right now, those are the only 2 that we see as conflicts or that we know of. So
what are the chances, since this has now become the only regional board that meets monthly, that we don't meet on a couple of those dates?
We are truly cognizant of how busy your schedules are, or we try to be. So we're just scheduling these, and if we get to the executive committee, we will work through the president, and if we feel like there's a meeting that we don't need to have and it's not urgent, we would be fine with postponing till the next meeting. But we do have some items that are, you know, the strategic plan, we really want to get going. We really want your input and involvement with that. And then as those meetings come up and we have direction, and there's several ordinances we want to talk about here coming up. So we'd rather have them on the schedule, and then as we get closer to that meeting, then pull it, then not have it scheduled and not have you available.
Yeah. And that has been our direction. We will pull as needed, just to kind of show the realities of it. Last month, we had to miss the meeting, unfortunately, and now we have this meeting, and now we're at 3 o'clock and still going with multiple items. So it's one of those, we either do a lot in one meeting every other month, or we spread it out over monthly meetings. And hopefully we can, you know, get everything more consolidated, and then we don't have to do this on a monthly basis, but...
Mr. Chairman, I share Supervisor Hill's concern and just would only ask staff to be aware, as you obviously are, of that. And to the extent that we don't have to convene a full meeting, I think as long as we know what's ahead of us, I think we'll use these as necessary.
Thank you. We will try to strategize that moving forward.
Are we ready? Oh, we have public comment.
Oh, yeah, sorry. We do not have any public comment on this item, so.
We don't?
The item is closed, so.
Then I would move, take a shot at this and move approval of the schedule.
Second. All right, we've got approval in a second. Can we just do a voice vote on this? Yeah. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Adam Hill is opposed. Any abstentions?
To be consistent. Yeah,
principle.
Way to stick with your guns. Item number 18, org chart and additional IWMA staff accountant.
Again, so those of you who may not remember or are new to the board, we had several reports that investigated improvements that could be made from IWMA from the standpoint of policy and procedure and staffing, and those reports came back and both recommended that we have an additional staff member. We worked with the county to look at what that would be as far as accounting and some reporting work and some procurement work, and basically it came under accounting function as the primary purpose, and accountant two in the county is what county HR recommended, and that is their pay grade. So we are requesting that we be able to add an accountant position and approve the org chart as you see here with four full-time staff at IWMA.
Any questions from my colleague?
Yeah, the only thing, Brooks, is at the very top, San Luis citizens or San Luis County citizens? Probably ought to put a county in there, I think, yeah.
Okay.
That's a good call. Anything else?
Oh, I have just one. I don't know if this would come up now, but maybe Mr. Minery can classify. Mr. Lee, as you know, is not serving anymore, and he leaves the executive committee. And since we're in the organizational area, I know that Mr. Bourbeau would love to join the executive committee or anyone else, but it seems like we need to add a third member to the executive committee. It seems like this could fall under this if we wanted to name somebody, and I have already volunteered because he seems so eager, Mr. Bourbeau. So that if that seems like we can do that, yeah. I think we need a third member.
Yeah, I would agree.
So I would nominate and certainly be open to anyone else, Mr. Bourbeau, to be the third member of the executive committee.
Second that.
All right. All those in favor of Mr. Bourbeau joining the executive committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'll abstain.
All right. You're in, buddy. It's fun. Trust me. All right, and beyond that, do we have any public comment on this item? Seeing none, closed public comment.
Anybody want? Staff's recommendation.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. All right, on to the meat. Item number 19, and I'm a vegetarian, so that's kind of weird. Updating existing IWMA ordinance and board consideration of single-use disposable and solar panels. I also have several public comments on this item, but let's get the report first.
Yes, so we have ordinances that date all the way back to 2008. In our review of those, most of them have not been updated or reconsidered by the board in that time. So we looked at those and tried to sequence those in order of importance or what we thought would be priorities for the board members. And then we added to that number two, which would be single-use disposables, mostly plastic items, and the solar panels as item five. And solar panels is an issue because the state is mandating that all houses as of 2020 that are constructed have to have solar panels installed, but there is no criteria for how durable or how long-lasting those panels could be. And so what we're hearing from the industry is that they're making panels that are going to last 5 years, and then they're going to have to be thrown away or replaced. And so the state would consider that to be a hazardous waste, and the landfill would reject it, so people have nowhere to dispose of these panels. And we are getting some now just from panels that have been on houses for 25 or 30 years. And so before we get inundated with panels that are very expensive and there is no market for recycling at this point in the state, we'd like to bring that to the board and have them consider some options and just investigate it, kind of flesh it out a little bit. But the rest of them are existing, and we just want to work through those and update those. And you're not making a decision on what happens with any one of these in particular today. For example, on carryout bags, we will bring back to you next month what carryout bags are, what the ordinance says, give you some options, and then you will tell us what direction you want us to go with modifying the ordinance. So, or not.
Got any questions before we do public comment?
Just a point of clarification. I had asked Mr. Stayer at the beginning of the meeting, but for everybody else, you intend to bring these forward in the sequence listed, correct?
Correct. That's really what you're approving is the sequence, and you, and again, you as the board will decide what gets changed with each of them or not.
And if I could ask, thank you, Mr. Chair, the criteria upon which you ordered these, by the amounts, by the out-of-datedness?
A mixture of how much of an issue they are, how problematic they are to the industry. For example, plastic bags are notorious in our recycling operation that they are contaminant and very difficult when they get put in recycling, and they are still a litter issue, and so we thought that should be first.
So, Mr. Chairman, just as I very well likely have to leave before this conversation's over, let me just say I'm fully supportive of working through this list. I'll accept the priority list as it is, but I think as each one of these comes forward, we might ask for a clear statement of the issue that we're working to solve here and why they have achieved the priorities that they do. A little more detail would be helpful, but I think that's absolutely good governance to get through here, address various aspects of our waste stream, and to make sure that our ordinances that are on the books are updated to current standards. So I'm supportive.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
One question.
Yeah, Mr. Stewart.
Thank you. From your assessment, how long do you think it would take for us to tackle all these? Is there kind of a general time period?
I didn't put a timeline on it. I just figured we'd start with the first one and go as quickly as we can, but some of them are going to be relatively simple, but there may be more dialogue and carry-out bags depending on the wishes of the board.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, public comment. We've got Jane Swanson.
I'm a local resident. I live in San Luis Obispo. I'm reading a letter composed by Janine Rands. I'm sure you all know who Janine is. She couldn't be here today, and she asked me to read her letter. I'm grateful that we are at this point to address yet another issue of the pollution and unnecessary waste of plastic bags using resources from petroleum to the final disposal in our landfills and ocean. I'm glad that I'm part of a county that is taking a hard look at the issues that are impacting our climate problems. I take issue with the current state the county has with plastic bags because retail and grocery stores continue to sell copious amounts of new plastic bags for 10 cents. This pittance amount of money does not begin to address the true costs of using a plastic bag when it is not returned for reuse and stores are obliged to provide a take-back system. No one knows if indeed these bags are sent off for recycling despite our passionate efforts to bring back clean, dry bags to a collection site. According to the documentary Life in Plastic, California's Recycling Woes, which I urge each of you to watch, the waste disposal in Los Angeles says that, quote, if there is no market, even the best plastic destined for recycling is sent to landfills. I'm going to skip three of her paragraphs for brevity here. Her conclusion is very excellent. I ask you to consider revising of the existing plastic bag ordinance with these additions. One, all single-use plastic bags are banned from distribution at the point of sale, including farmers markets, restaurants. Dry cleaning plastic bags should not be allowed. Newspaper delivery bags should be used only during the rainy season. Reusable plastic bags be manufactured with a ribbon handle. There's more, but I see the time, so I'll wrap it up. The Waste Management Agency should increase education and have a campaign logo such as Sustainable SLO. I urge you to do right by the citizens of San Luis Obispo County and our future generations. Sincerely, Janine Rands. She also sent her letter electronically to the board, so you can read her middle paragraphs. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Swanson. Susan Harvey.
Good afternoon. Susan Harvey for North County Watch, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm here speaking for North County Watch, and our comments are based on supporting the request submitted by, Ms. Rands. So I'll just add the couple that Jane skipped, which was that a plastic mill of 4.0 or greater is required and composed of at least 60% recycled material. Consider grocery, retail bulk, vegetable produce, and meat. That's accepted bags replace undesirables. And then she has two issues, which Jane had mentioned about an education program, and since that had come up a couple of times today, I wanted to reiterate how useful that could be for the public. I'm going to give this is just the list I'll give to this gentleman. Thank you so much. Integrated waste isn't exactly glamorous, but it's so important because we all make so much waste. So I really appreciate the time you put into this, and I hope the single use and the carry out bags issue is really important. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Dunn? Oh. Sneaks up on you, I know.
Hello again. Luke Dunn. Ahoy. Let me just say I'm deeply grateful for all of you consistently showing up and being here. Very grateful for your level of dedication for our community being more conscientious. Let me just clarify some things that I also sent to your email account. One of them was from the Center for International Environmental Law. There's an article, or it's a whole bunch of data on the hidden cost of the plastic industry. There are three different versions on there that you guys can check out. There's also something from Five Gyres, which is the 501(c) special consultative status with the United Nations Economic and Social Council since 2017. Great information on there. And then also an article from Yale making some correlational findings from how plastic contributes to climate change. And then if you all also haven't explored the findings from the UN Emissions Gap Report, I entreat you to do so. Spoiler alert, no one is meeting their goals. And then I'd also like to just mention that San Luis Obispo has established the goal to be a carbon neutral city by 2035. I'm sure you're all aware of that. So if you have any doubts or reservations on moving towards a more ambitious or progressive removal of the petroleum-based single-use plastic bag, I implore you to review the mounting evidence that plastic is harmful not only to the human health but our environment. The cold reality is that petroleum industry is big oil. And I assure you that our community's best interests are not a priority of these industries. So I urge you to think proactively about the implications of your decisions on future generations. I beseech you to look beyond your current constituents of today and think of the ones to come. We are borrowing the future from our society's youth, and what will your legacy be to them? I still have some time. Let me just spitball real quick to maybe break some misconceptions about the soft plastic recycling industry. I've been to Trex. The Trex is the final destination for a lot of the soft film plastic. That's one of their main headquarters is based in Nevada. It is a collapsing industry. Even though it is deemed recyclable, it's only recyclable if you can make money off of it, and that's failing. Another cold fact of reality of the situation. I would urge you not to try, because, you know, one could make the argument like, oh, we could try a bioplastic-based single-use bag as opposed to petroleum, but it's still a single-use problem that's, you know, the sort of... Anyway, I'll just end at that. I trust you all will make the right decision. I'm so thankful that you're here time and time again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Dunn. Lindy Owen...
Good afternoon, Lindy Owen from Los Osos. It's my first visit to one of your meetings, but I have been very concerned about waste and the waste stream that is generated by each of us in this room and the possibilities of doing a better job at getting it limited and hopefully to the right place if we are able to recycle. A couple things I'll hit on is education, I think, has certainly been lacking. I didn't know that you're supposed to take the cap off of a plastic bottle when you put it in. That's a pretty simple step, and that wouldn't have been too hard to get the public to go along with. So education could go a long ways, and I think whatever way we have to get out to do it is really important. I've seen very little education. I have a few of them here. That, you know, it's just not enough, and we need to compel people to worry. This whole China ban, the idea that we have communities that have such filthy recycling that it can't even be sent to China before, it should be a wake-up call for all of us. So how do you put your recyclables in? Do you just take half a jar of mayonnaise and slop it into your blue bin? No. You squeeze it out, you put it in a container of some kind, put it in the trash if that's where it can go, or if you compost, which is not a bad place for it. But that's the kind of education that would help each human in this county figure out what to do with their stuff instead of being slobs and making a waste stream that is not usable. The plastic ban that we're talking about, I don't know why you have to buy 4 apples in a plastic container. That's absolutely insane. So if we think that we have endless resources, and that's the way we live, and that's just how we can't go back to putting them in a basket and putting them on the register, then we are really missing out on our children's future because we won't have any place to put all the plastic. I really think one thing that's been seriously lacking is in this country is how can we not set up recycle places to reuse and make that product here rather than send it to China. We tend to, as Americans, we tend to send all our garbage to somebody else to take care of. I would like us to use less, and that could be the beginning of the education thing, and then certainly to clean it well enough so that it can go into a recycle stream and actually go someplace. The CRV, I resent having to pay a CRV on everything that I buy in a bottle or a container that's CRV rated. When the money, where did the money go? That's what I'd like to know, because it's going into some stream. I understand the grocery stores pay a $100 fine for not providing recycling centers. That's got to change. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. That is the end of public comment. And just since we've heard education repeated often, I really want to advise people to go to our website and give us feedback and also look into understand. We literally put a lot of time, money, and effort into our educational programs. And it's hard to get them to everybody because that's just the reality of marketing. I have a small business. You can never market enough. That's just, we can't. But we have a finite budget, therefore we can't go beyond that budget scope. So we do look for feedback on what it is that you would look for in a program? How would it best reach you? Because without that insight, we have to do what we do. So, again, IWMA.com. You can look at all the programs, look at all the various educational components, and email us. So that being said, we're back to this item. If there are any other comments.
Aaron, I'm going to have to excuse myself. I have a 4 o'clock back at City Hall. So
okay.
And Aaron, I have a 3:30, and they're up in my office right now.
Okay. Do we want to just pass it and move on?
Yeah. Move approval.
Second.
All right, we got a first and a second. Still voice votes fine with this? Yes. Jeff?
Voice vote.
Yes. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Item number 19 passes. All right. We now have a closed session. While we're getting set up for that, if we want to do a 5-minute bathroom break, because I know I need to use it. Are you staying?
Oh, no, she's here.
Tell if we're back on or not. Is it? Well, these are on. So.
Yeah, he's
over. All right, we're good. All right, we're coming back from closed session. There's no reportable items out of closed session. And other than that, we are now.
We've lost our quorum.
We've lost our quorum, so we're now adjourned.
Very good.